you know, we're dealing with it, you know, albeit clumsily, you know, but it's getting dealt with. And I shouldn't say clumsily. I should just say slowly. This one is crucial, though. So I'm like, what the hell? You know, I mean, literally, my eyes popped out. So I was like shocked. I was like, I got the snail mail on. Who sends snail mail? You know, for urgent situations. So you know right there that it wasn't good news, because once you get snail mail, you know it's typically somebody trying to rationalize denying you an essential service. I reached out to, you know, attorneys that are working on other issues for me. We're going to see where that goes. I don't quite know. Not discouraged or encouraged. I'm just sad, because this is why we're in the street marching, because, you know, a certain group in this country wants to at all costs deny you services that you're entitled to. I mean, this is basic need stuff. This isn't even extra. And you know, the other issue that I am why I was dealing with this in the back of my mind, I also was thinking about, you know, I was, well, for those that don't know, I used to have, oh boy, this is another issue. I used to have a video that substantiated this story, but it's no longer there because it was converted first to Real Player. I thought it was YouTube, but it wasn't converted to YouTube first. It was converted to a Real Player file for whatever reason. I remember this specifically, and then subsequently converted to YouTube, which has its own MP4 format. And YouTube promptly, you know, erased it. So I no longer have it. But it's a video of me on 9/12 at the World Trade Center, or returning from the World Trade Center, where I was involved. And it was no rescue at that point. It was all recovery. And so, at any rate, I don't want to get into the details. Suffice it to say that, you know, I subsequently enrolled in the World Trade Center health program, you know, by virtue of my, you know, after it's a whole, I mean, it's a long story. I could do a show on this alone, and maybe I will at some point. So after a long travality, they enrolled me in a program. And they have a contractor that they work with, LHI, and they also work with the Veterans Administration. They provide piss-poor service, really bad customer service, and they're unethical. So I was made privy to a communication some years ago when I was attempting to have an attorney look into the matter. You know, another guy was bragging that was doing advocating for this group, you know, of volunteers. I was a volunteer emergency medical technician. So he hooked me up with an attorney. So the attorney called somebody that I had already known in NOSH or CDC, because both those sub-agencies, the HHS, administer the World Trade Center Health Program. So the gentleman, the lawyer, called up and said he had spoken to the woman, and she gave some negative information to him, which she was stupid enough to put in writing. So I seen it, and I told her that, you know, that is absolutely false, a mischaracterization, and it's not true. Basically, she was saying I was not cooperating with the provider, with the contractor. And I said, you know, based on what the contractor was saying, to try to rationalize service failures and poor delivery of service issues that I had complained about. So, of course, they were going to be defensive and say that, but it wasn't true, and she did not have to repeat that, you know, without evidence. There is no evidence to substantiate what they had alleged to this lawyer. So the lawyer talked back, well, I can't help you because they're saying this, that, and the other. So he was a jackass as well. But that's not the point. The point is that they made made these defamatory claims in writing. And so, you know, I told her that, you know that's not true. You know you can't substantiate it, and you know that's defamatory. So she did retract in writing. And 3 days later, I get a letter from the World Trade Center Health Program denying a presumptively covered condition. So from that time forward, 20 years ago to now, had it not been for, my business sustaining me, I would be destitute. And now, because of the coronavirus and the devastation that it has caused to black businesses, we lost at least half. So there were 1.1 million, according to SBA data. And it is down to 440,000 black-owned or businesses that identify as black-owned that are registered. So we're not even talking about businesses that aren't registered. You know there are tons of those in our community. These are just the registered businesses or businesses that are on some sort of federal database that are identified as minority-owned. And, I was prompted as a consequence, thinking about this latest economic injustice which I am being confronted, to write the Congressional Black Caucus. And I did. I reached out to them, and, obviously I just did it. So, they're all Congress, representatives, so they have their own offices, districts, and duties to attend. However, collectively, they work on issues of import to the African-American community generally. And so I thought this was something that they ought to take up, because I'm sure the data is damning. I'm sure that the black and brown volunteers, I'm not talking about firefighters and police officers that were at World Trade Center. I'm talking brown volleys, been denied, workers' compensation. I was also denied workers' compensation, by the way, early on in that situation. They denied it, but they never disclosed the doctor that denied the my claim, which was substantiated by two physicians. One is a subsurgical specialist. Another one does my annual review, because every year you have a review by the World Trade Center Health Program to see how you're doing obsessively. So if they're reflexively denying me after I'm being after I have my annual and their own doctor is telling them, well, he has this condition, then you know that the fix is in. And this goes back in a full circle. Those that listen to the show on a regular basis know that I often go off on these lengthy excursions, but I inevitably come back to the original point. What Tony Brown was saying, that they, don't want to give us anything. And that's primarily what it is. It's economic injustice, which I think is greater than the racial injustice. And I'm not trying to equate the two. They're not analogous, because if someone loses their lives, as George Floyd did, and several others in the wake of George Floyd's lynching in high definition, there was another black guy that was shot in the back. And I didn't write a long piece. I wrote a short essay on his death, because I'm in a group, another group of black gun owners, and I am a gun owner. And he was saying, yeah, I would have shot him too, and blah, 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 blah. And we are, unfortunately, I don't want to say we, I don't want to broad stroke our community doing essentially what some do to us. But a lot of us are unread, and we don't read, and we don't research, and we have these knee-jerk reactions to current events. And my position is this, and this is the position that I raised in the essay, is that if the police can safely and humanely anesthetize a wild animal that has strayed into a populated area or community. Why isn't the same technology not employed when attempting to apprehend someone that is, you know, agitated, intoxicated, or mentally disturbed? And if you can't answer that question, then you do not need to be weighing in on why the police have a right to use deadly force, because it's an anachronistic concept that doesn't hold water. If you use that single example, I'm not talking about the examples of white suspects, you know, like Dylann Roof, who murdered 9 congregants in Mother Bethel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, and then was, you know, peacefully taken into custody and fed Burger King. Or the other suspect in Tennessee recently, I believe it was yesterday, the day before yesterday, that wrestled with an officer, disarmed him, and was subsequently taken into custody. They roughed him up, of course, but he was taken into custody alive. And, you know, I want to get into this, but I don't want to get into it. What I wanted to deal with, however, is economic injustice during this show, and because it personally impacts me, and I'm like, are these people kidding? I mean, it's just this is mind-boggling stuff here. I mean, if I really were at liberty to disclose the detail, you'd be like, what? I mean, it is just where, you know, they believe they can get away with it, and they want, I mean, there is absolutely no rationale. There's no justification. There's certainly no law that supports what they're attempting to do. It's not legal. So, you know, I have lawyers looking at it, so don't get it twisted. Don't think that I'm sitting here getting ready to let them do me in. I'm not. But I'm just shocked at the brazenness, you know, and I'm an old man. I really, you know, I don't like to describe myself as that because I don't feel old. But I'm realistic. I'm a pragmatist. I've always have been. And I have never lied to myself. It's one thing about Dennis Shipman that he will, you know, because I don't believe in that. I believe if I have to lie, then I don't need to be dealing with you or anyone else. And certainly, you know, I see a lot of people engaged in that, a lot of family members, which is why I don't have a lot of friends, because I don't engage in that. I don't engage in people who like to delude themselves. And I have a cousin. I love him dearly, but I don't have a relationship with him because he bullcraps himself all the time, and I don't like that. You know, I remember one time we were at a get-together gathering at another cousin's house, and a young woman there was talking about she needed some work done on her house and blah, 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 blah. And I know he does this sort of handyman stuff. I don't know how good he is. He's never done any work for me. And at any rate, you know, so I suggested that she, you know, talk to him. He was standing right there at the time. So he counters. This is the stuff that really, you know, why we don't talk or get along. I'm not a handyman. I'm a carpenter, huh? When did you apprentice with anyone to gain that sort of credential? Because carpentry is not, none of the trades are easy. The trades require as much training, you know, typically 4,000 hours. 4,000 hours is 4 years, man. And that is typically the amount of time needed to gain expertise in any field of endeavor, anything. That's why a college degree is 4 years. You know, it's based on that assumption that it's going to take at least 4,000 hours for you to attain expertise. And in any trade. So an apprenticeship in anything is typically 4 years. You become an apprentice and a journeyman, and that whole evolution lasts 4 years before you can call yourself an electrician, plumber, a carpenter, or anything. I know for a fact that my cousin did not go through that process. And I'm not saying that you can't learn on your own, but when you learn on your own, or you become a carpenter, electrician, or whatever, as a consequence of being self-taught, you still have to test to become licensed. Now, carpenters might not be licensed, but to say you want a union gig, I knew a young lady that I thought was my cousin, another cousin. I thought that was somebody that, a love interest of his. He said, no, she actually liked you. I didn't know that. Anyway, that's an aside. She told me many, many years ago. I haven't seen her in years. I mean, this is at least a decade I haven't seen her. I asked him about her a few years ago, and he said she's all right. She's still down there doing her thing. She was an apprentice carpenter. And so I don't know if she finished the program. Like I said, this was many, many years ago. But if she is, she's making a lot of money, because I know carpenters, apprentice carpenters make $30 an hour, and I'm sure that once they finish and they become union carpenters, or they work one of the guilds, the entertainment guilds, setting up sets and that sort of thing, it can go up to easily $70, $80, $90 an hour, scale. So, where we are in this country with these businesses, especially black businesses that are experiencing extraordinary financial stress, and I told you that I was already turned down for the economic distress assistance. I didn't even get, part of the thing was that you were supposed to get up to $10,000, whether you were approved, and I didn't even get that, the advance. I didn't even get the, and this is how they do, man. And, a lot of times people say, especially apologists for white supremacy, they're the first ones out the gate, saying, oh, man, everything is not racist. That's not racist. Yes, it is racist. It is. It's demonstrably racist. Because if you look at all the white or majority-owned businesses that got economic assistance, in comparison, if you compare and contrast the two groups, you will see that a substantially smaller number of black or African-American businesses received assistance. And those that did, their books, everything, all their duckies were lined up in a row. And I was just talking to someone this morning at SBDC who, for whatever reason, wasted my time. I mean, she was supposed to be calling me up to, for whatever reason. I don't even know why she was calling me, because I had sent her all the information, which she apparently didn't bother to read. The business plan, what I wanted in it, and my bio for the executive summary portion, core competencies for the business, and my resume. All that stuff needs to go in the executive summary. She had reviewed none of that information, because the first thing out of her mouth was, what are your, first of all, did you even read it? Obviously you don't want to be rude, but I'm impatient with this sort of incompetence and ineptitude and people willing to squander your time. So, obviously that was a very short conversation, and I followed up with an email because you can't allow people to take hostage the narrative, because they will frame it in a way that makes you look bad and them good, inevitably. So I immediately fired off an email to SBDC in Delaware telling the director over there what had occurred. Well, I didn't actually frame it as a complaint. I just said what didn't occur, so that they wouldn't be on the defensive. But this is where I'm at. I mean, this economic injustice, man, is something that we're. This is what we're in the street for. Also, people think that we're only in the street because of police brutality. No, we want to deal with it all. We want to go all the way back. We've never had truth and reconciliation. This is what my longer essay was about last week. I asked you know, a guy that I used to be very cool with, that used to share the show. He used to come on the show and actually co-host. John Clifton. He's no longer with East New York, and he's not with the show, obviously. And you know, didn't read the essay because he wanted to focus on something that was irrelevant, and I told him as much. And you know, I dealt with you know, the fact that we never had truth and reconciliation in this country. And until we do, we're going to constantly have George Floyd's and Eric Garner's and everybody that has died as a consequence of the unbridled brutality visited upon us by the majority. And, you know, South Africa, I'm not saying that they are a perfect example. They are not. But they are one of the wealthiest, more successful countries in Africa. But it's still a situation there where you have Afrikaners and, you know, Boers. They no longer characterize themselves, whites, as such. Well, white Africans who own the majority of businesses and the farms and things as such in there. So you have entrenched poverty, despite their Truth and Reconciliation Commission. But it was necessary for the country to move forward and for the United States to move forward. And this is what I wrote to the CBC, the Congressional Black Caucus, that we need to explore all these issues, economic injustice, as well as injustice in the criminal justice system. It all needs to be put on the table, and now is the time to seize the day and to discuss this or these issues in detail, because, you know, it's not going away. Just like this virus is not going away, these issues are not going away. And we're going to discuss this more in coming shows, and listen to the rest of Mark and Pulpit International co-host Monday through Friday right here, Blog Talk Radio. Day and a fantastic week. God bless.